Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I wanted to talk about the food drop yesterday.
Well, Valdez, I saw it on the outline that Valdez was upset, and we had
Roy Boyce came yesterday.
All right, they delivered
a bunch of chicken.
They had biscuits. A huge spread, and it was fried chicken, chicken tenders, mac and cheese, waffle fries,
chicken,
Brussels sprouts, biscuits. Mm-hmm. I mean, a whole smorgasbord full of food. All right.
Oh, and I know what you're upset. You're upset with all the vultures.
I am so bitter, especially at Sonny and PGC.
Well, I have to say, to defend them, I told them, because Joe Claire was standing there staring at
why are you giving them the okay?
What?
Not everyone from the show is
chicken.
And they took all the chicken. He's standing there staring at it. And I was like, go ahead, help yourself. I was being a gentleman.
I mean, I don't care ultimately, but I had one drumstick. That's it. Like during the break,
there were three buckets of chicken.
I mean, it was 30 seconds left. We were about to get a break, so I just grabbed one drumstick. And the next time it went out, it was all gone.
Sometimes I can't just go out there immediately to go grab food when there's a food drop. There's stuff I have to do in here. And when I walked out of there, and it was probably 20 minutes after the food drop came, and you guys got all your food.
Yeah.
And so when I went out there, there were buckets of chicken empty.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was butt-sized for a silly breast.
Well, you have to get
you
there early.
You wanted
to jog. Listen,
no jogs
to defend them.
Why are you doing that?
Because he was staring at
all
the
right,
food.
Just say hang on a minute. Just say hang on a minute.
He probably took heavy. He probably took six pieces.
Well,
do you know what he said?
What?
He said, I crushed your guys' food drop.
Yeah. Right. Well, I invited
him. Is that your Joe Claire
impression? That's my Joe Claire impression.
He said, I crushed your guys' food drop. I invited him.
But that's not everything that happened, because what they brought the food in, and Joe Claire followed the food to our table.
I can't believe it.
You were one of the first ones out there. And then what Joe did is he went back and told everyone at PGC, come and get the food.
Yeah.
And you were the only one who
You were the gatekeeper.
I just went there and got my food. He's staring at it. I said, help yourself.
No, you can't do that.
Well, I can't.
Especially at a radio station, you can't do that.
Whatever happened to that goofy lamp?
Remember, if the light
was gone?
People complained. People complained.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they said it was bullying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Management.
Drab management.
For those that are listening, there was a lamp, and there was a sign, and it said if the lamp was on, nobody could touch the food. But if the lamp was off, then it was
fair game.
Yeah. Or vice versa. I can't remember.
So it's your fault. I was wondering who the culprit is.
Well, and I said,
hey,
Joe, help yourself.
You got to stop. Everyone's got to stop being so nice
Maybe
around
we
here.
Need to. We have to hide the food.
Yeah.
We've come up with a solution.
Danny's studio.
Oh, no. What if you do
this? Put it in here. And you
what
guys
if you do
can
this?
Be
yeah. You put a little table
no
here, and they set up the food. Yeah, and just bring it in studio.
Because we always have guests in here.
No, but that would be good. It would be better pub for the people dropping off the food. They could actually put a little sign.
Yesterday's food drop was supposed to be under the radar.
I already got in trouble for it.
Oh, you did?
And that also wrecked me, because it was a shady food drop. There's the whole process you're supposed to go through. Yeah. I did.
Bypassed the process.
By the way, 8 out of 10 are shady like that.
I got grilled by CK, and I went out there after getting grilled to at least have one piece of chicken, and it was all pummeled. I saw the new PGC program director.
Like three biscuits and a scoop of mac and cheese.
So you sidestepped all the rules. Yeah. You got a silly put up chicken breast.
And the new PD got in the mix?
Yeah, the new PD had buckets full walking back to his office.
He hasn't been here 10 minutes, and 5 of them were spent at the chicken table.
I'm telling you, we got to hide them.
And then you know how...
If you have fried chicken in this building, it has no shot. Let's be honest.
Bottom of the bucket chicken sucks, too. And that's all we were stuck with.
No. The solution
is...
We got
to hide the food.
Put it in your studio.
I don't care that there are a billion sit-in guests. The table has to be in here. This has to be...
That will
the spot.
Slow down the attack
then,
on the food
then
big
you,
time.
You have to stop being so nice. He has to stop being so nice.
I can't help it. I'm a nice person.
Do you guys know that Valdez tweeted Sonny?
Oh,
an aggressive tweet accusing her of stealing the food?
Can you read it to me?
Why are you doing that? That's a reflection of us. You can't do that.
Well, I was standing up for your guys, but I didn't know you were giving them every single piece of chicken.
They're welcome. They're our coworkers.
So she tweeted a picture of her plate and said breakfast, smiley face. And then Valdez tweeted her, so that's where my food went.
I like it. You know what? You got to stand up for yourself. Did she respond?
No. Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
He's just bitter that Sonny doesn't talk to him at the coffee machine. That's all.
Fine.
Oh, by the way, I didn't even have one morsel of the chicken because I knew I was going out to lunch, so I just like leaving it for whoever. So I didn't even have a shred of it.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I had one pickle. Right. I went by and took a silly pickle.
I had a bunch of waffle fries. Hey, I'm not going to lie.
This station comes first when it comes to food drops. Then everyone else can get the gristle.
Let's be clear. The station comes first in everything.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. You know, the top of the food chain needs to eat.
I wasn't saying they should eat before you guys eat, or if they eat, you won't be
and
able
it's actually,
to eat.
It's
I just invited them to eat.
It's actually kind of a shot at us, too, because you hold Joe Claire above us.
That's not true.
On the totem pole.
I'm not tracking
and we're in here.
Put their grubby fingers in there yet.
There's a process. Everybody knows the process. Host, then producers, then other shows, and then the gristle.
As far as I'm concerned, there's no process.
Then engineers are last.
It should be us first. I don't consider me. I mean, I am above you, but as far as getting the food.
Well, we know that.
You eat first, Rick. Haven't you noticed?
No. Yes.
No. I only look out. I just look. I see food. I eat it.
The new process has
to be. I'm not tracking who's dug in yet.
There's a hierarchy of chicken.
The food, once it comes in, it cannot go on display in the hallway. It's coming in here. If you need food security, it's coming in here. You can't leave it out there.
Well, now we have to come through the loading dock because Joe Claire is following the food cart.
He follows the scent.
But you can't blame him.
He's like
good.
My dog.
You can't blame him. I just want to know, why'd you go out of your way to get yelled at just so AWOD could get more free dinner? Is that ultimately why you did it?
It was stupid.
Yeah, you did it just so Adam could get a couple free meals, essentially?
Because it's Adam's friend.
Right, because Adam gets free meals, and so it's his way of paying
mostly,
him back.
Adam asked me to set this up. I agreed to it. I told promotions about it, but you're supposed to go through sales and everything.
Because sales want to sink their teeth into them and try and squeeze money out of them.
Right. So at 9:01, I got an email from CK saying, why'd you do this food drop and not go through sales?
All right.
And I gave him some BS answer. Right. Got in trouble. And I didn't get any chicken.
Yeah, you didn't get any chicken.
By the way, you got no
free food. Trab, do you want to out how many people are now on the Chuck Lee bandwagon?
There was a Pamplona party last night I saw on
Instagram.
It was embarrassing.
Was Valdez there?
Well, I spent a long time trying to find Valdez in these videos, and he denies that he goes to Pamplona as often as he does. So
Is he there all the time?
He was. He says he wasn't there last night.
I was not there.
Yeah, but it was just an embarrassing table of people looking for free food from Chuck Lee.
So who was there?
It was AWOD, Aaron Hawksworth, and Guy Lambert, people who wouldn't speak to each other outside of free food at Pamplona, all acting like they're best friends and cheersing
so
all night
Lambert
long.
So Guy Lambert double-dipped. He had free chicken here. He had to go get the Pamplona free meals. Yeah. I applaud his hustle.
Guy Lambert does the news on PGC, for those that don't know.
Yeah. That is amazing. How many drinks last night, Dum Dum?
I definitely hit the over.
Over 8.5 was the number.
Yep. Yeah. I think I had 10.
How do you feel today?
You probably feel fine.
Not bad.
He does it every night.
Did you have your drinking poop yet? Or?
Oh, where do you think I was last segment?
That way. Yeah, right.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein. He's brought to you by Golfdom, located in Tysons, Virginia, or at golfdomgolf.com. Visit today to experience the best in golf. On and off the course, Golfdom, live the game. Good morning, John.
Good morning, fellas. How's everybody doing?
John, doing all right.
We've got a question for you before we get into sports topics.
We do?
I hope I have an answer.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Why do you get yourself into Twitter battles with guys like Dick Vitale?
That is a great question.
Why do you do it?
It's a great question. You know, the one thing I've realized through the years that Bob Knight and I have in common that is unfortunate is the need to have the last word.
Right.
And it's a bad habit. And it's funny because I talked to Dick on the phone yesterday.
So you don't have a personal beef with him?
No, I like Dick. And I was glad that he called me. And, you know, we talked about the whole Patino thing and we still agree to disagree, and which is fine. But I think I said to you guys a few weeks ago that I had made myself a promise that on Labor Day or the day after Labor Day, I was going to start cutting back on Twitter time. Just get on in the morning, maybe put out a couple tweets, and then not go back either till the evening just before bed or the next day. And I still haven't broken the habit. It's you know, it's like smoking. I got to break the habit and spend much less time on Twitter. And it's not even so much spending any time arguing with Dick, because it never gets out of control or angry. But it's, you know, with people who are going to start screaming stuff and be profane. And those people, I have started to just, you know, I don't even respond. I just
block them.
By
the way, just to recap, if you don't follow these guys on Twitter, I think Dick Vitale tweeted out that he thinks that Arizona should fire Sean Miller and hire Rick Pitino, and Feinstein lost his marbles.
Well, I don't know that he said they should hire Rick, but he's been pounding the drum ever since Rick got fired at Louisville that Rick should have another college job, one. But two, the part that bothers me, you know, because plenty of guys who've been caught cheating have gotten jobs. I mean, you know, John Calipari's had two Final Fours vacated, and he's a god in Kentucky, just as one example. But Rick never did anything wrong. That, you know, Rick's pure as the driven snow, and Rick's not. That whole Madam scandal, he blamed it all on a 25-year-old assistant coach who was making $14,000 a year. That this guy's walking around paying off hookers and stuff, and for 4 years, Rick knew nothing. He was Sergeant Schultz. And we all know that basketball coaches, especially really good ones like Pitino, are absolute control freaks. Mm-hmm. And so this notion that Pitino knew nothing for four or five years, however long it went on, and, you know, he didn't know anything about the Bowen thing, he didn't know anything about that. Stop it already. And you might have noticed that in the statement made by Louisville and Pitino jointly when they settled their lawsuit, and by the way, Pitino got $0. He filed a suit for $38 million, got zero. What does that tell you? Yeah. In that joint statement, Pitino finally says that as the head coach, he takes responsibility for the NCAA violations that occurred. It's the first time he said this since all this started.
Life's just too short to get yourself all worked up.
I agree 100%, Jason. You're 100% right.
Well, because I think what happens is, because I don't think, you know, I'm on Twitter a lot. That's where I get my news.
Yeah, right.
But I try not to respond to people that say things that irritate me.
And that's the way to do it. And the other thing that happens, I'm sure you guys have had this experience, is, you know, I start back and forth with Dick, and then all people start weighing in and taking, you know, really mean shots at Dick.
Yeah.
You know, you're over the hill, you're this, you're that. And I don't need to deal with that on my Twitter feed, you know. And again, the other day I finally tweeted, just so people understand, I like and respect Dick. He's been great to me through the years, which is all true. I just disagree with him on this.
Right. I would tell Dick the same thing. Stay off.
Well, that's
Twitter.
What I did. Yeah. I mean, we had a good talk on the phone, and the last thing I said was, Dick, we're going to disagree on this forever. I understand your loyalty to your friend, because Pitino's a friend of his, obviously. But I think you're 100% wrong on this, and I still love you.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. That's life.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
Exactly. But on the flip side, if that was Coach K that was in Pitino's situation and he had the same reputation, you would probably stick up for K.
I probably would. And the difference, of course, being that, you know, other than people who try to create myths, Mike has never been on NCAA probation.
I know.
And Pitino was first investigated when he was an assistant coach at Hawaii 40 years ago.
My point is, you play favorites. Everyone does.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. You know, it's like my friend Tony Kornheiser says, we're all in the tank for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And look, that's human nature. I gave up on the notion that we in the media are quote-unquote objective years ago. We all have biases. We have biases on everything. We have biases, you know, we're biased on how we make our coffee in the morning. Everybody's biased. Mm-hmm. The point is to recognize your biases. You know, I would hope, to use your example, Jason, that if somebody put evidence right in front of me that was incontrovertible that Mike Krzyzewski had broken rules, you know, that I would look at it and say, ah, geez, I feel terrible about it, but I've got to report it because it's my job. And I think that, you know, as much as I dislike Dan Snyder, I'll give you an example since Tony Wiley quit yesterday. when they signed Alex Smith, you guys know I worked with Alex Smith mm-hmm. on the quarterback book. I wrote a column in the Post saying this was a good move. This was a smart thing to do to bring in an experienced quarterback. Smith would be a great leader in a locker room. All of the Cousins questions would be behind him. You know, and Tony Wiley called me and thanked me for the column. He said, I know how you feel about Dan, but that column was fair. And I said, look, when you guys do something right, I'm going to report it, no matter how I might feel about Dan. And that's what I try to do. Do I succeed 100%? I'm sure not.
By the way, John, thank you for the copies of Bench Warmers.
I'm glad they arrived.
If you want to plug the book.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, they're being stolen left and right. We've had four or five in here. So that's good, John.
Yeah, it's like they're fried chicken in here.
it's a good news, bad news joke. You know, it's like when I have a book out, and of course, Bench Warmers is for kids, so I hope the people stealing them are giving them to their kids.
Right.
But people will say, oh, I loved your book. I gave it to this guy and that guy. And I'm like, no. Make them buy the damn book.
But if
people are interested, that's always a good thing too.
All right. So,
and this book is different. It's another, you know, kids book. You know, I've written 14 of them now, I think 13 or 14 of them. And this is a new series. It's about a sixth grade girl and a sixth grade boy. And it's about a girl who's a talented soccer player. But the soccer coach, sixth grade soccer coach, doesn't want her on a boys' team. Mm. And we all know this is a battle that goes back to the 70s in Little League Baseball, but it's still going on in many places, unfortunately. And that's really the crux of the plot, how she and her buddy, Jeff Michaels is the kid's name, deal with a situation to get her on the team and then to get her on the field, because even after he's forced to put her on the team eventually, the coach doesn't want to play her, because he thinks it's bad for the morale of the boys to be playing with a girl who's better than they are.
Well, good luck on that, and we'll plug it whenever you want.
I appreciate that. Read aloud from it in the next hour if you so desire.
We will. Sure. Hey, listen.
Quote it to Barry Zito when he comes on.
Barry Zito, it will be on at 8:40. Anyway, let's talk Nats here before we let you go. They're playing, you know, basically wild card playoff games every single night. Now, their schedule was difficult. Milwaukee's has not been difficult, and Milwaukee has really closed the gap. They've won 15 of 18, and they're one back. But the Nats do get the Marlins this weekend down there.
Yep.
Marlins are poo. The Marlins have lost 99 games. So this is where the schedule softens for the Nats. They've got to take advantage of it. Do you still like the Nats based on the remaining
schedule? I do, and I'll tell you why. There's a couple things here. First of all, you're right. They get the Marlins this weekend, and then the last eight are at home.
Right.
We don't know what kind of condition the Phillies are going to be in when they get here, whether they're still in contention. You know, they're sort of on the fringes of contention now, barely. So they could be done by the time they get here for that five-game series. The Indians will definitely be playing for something next weekend. The division seems unlikely, but they're right in the smack in the middle of the wild card race in the American League. But here's why I believe the Nationals are going to make the playoffs. The Cubs are collapsing. They just lost two in Cincinnati.
Yep.
They lost in 10 last night to the Cardinals. They've got to play the Cardinals six more times. And the Cardinals are trying to clinch the Central, so they got plenty to play for, too. The Brewers, you're right, have been hot. And come on, Jason, let's give the Brewers some credit. They lost a guy who probably would have been the MVP.
I know.
And they're still winning.
Yep.
So you can talk about schedule, non-schedule. The fact is they've continued to win without Christian Yelich, and they deserve credit for that. I think the wild card game will be Brewers at Nats or Nats at Brewers. I think the Cubs are, as I said, are falling apart. And I think that's where the Nats have a cushion, that the Cubs just aren't playing well, and they have to play the Cardinals six times. So, but this is the weekend. You're right. This is the weekend for them to sort of, you know, put themselves in a comfortable position going into that last week.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go to Miami and minimum win two, if not sweep.
Minimum win two. You should sweep. The Marlins, like you said, have lost 99. They're not any good. They got nothing to play for. So you ought to go in there and win at least two and probably three. And if you do that, then you're not on cruise control for the last week, but you're in a comfortable position for sure.
Do you give Notre Dame a shot in Athens tomorrow night?
You know, sure, because we don't know enough about Georgia or Notre Dame yet. They haven't played anybody. So this is the first real game for both teams. Obviously, Georgia has the advantage playing at home. You know, if you play in Notre Dame, you're playing 19 against 11 most of the time. You don't have to do that shouldn't have to do that playing at home. And Notre Dame always has talent that's as good as any in the country. I mean, Brian Kelly does a good job of making people think that, you know, it's amazing that we ever recruit a player. They have all the every advantage you could want in college football, including their own television network. So, yeah, sure, I give them a shot. Absolutely, I give them a shot. By the way, though, you didn't ask me what's bothering me in sports this morning. And the answer is refereeing in football.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's ugly.
College and pro.
Both levels, yeah.
I mean, and some of it is not the official's fault because there are too damn many rules. And half the time, they don't even know what they're calling. You know, this is targeting, this isn't targeting. 2 weeks ago in the Michigan-Army game, an Army kid got thrown out of the game for targeting because, according to Dean Blandino's explanation, after the Michigan kid got hit, as the Army kid came in to finish off the tackle, because he'd been hit so hard, he was quote-unquote helpless. Now, how the hell is a defender supposed to know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw
you know, it's one thing if you come flying across the field and you hit a guy when he's trying to catch the ball. But the guy's been hit, and he's in the process of going down, and you come in to finish off the tackle, and you're thrown out of the game. I mean, I just use that as an example of how bad some of the rules are now. And between the rules and replay and the officiating itself, it's a debacle. I mean, it's making football, I think, for many people almost unwatchable.
All right, John, we got to run. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Thank you, buddy.
But do we have Barry Zito on the line?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
See the thumbs up.
Barry Zito joins us. You may remember him as a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, two-time World Series champ.
How could you
now
forget?
Now has a new memoir called Curveball, which is available wherever books are sold.
Got to get my copy.
Yeah. What's up, Barry?
What's up, fellas? How are we doing?
Barry, thanks for joining us.
I saw the interview you did on MLB Network a few days ago. And honestly, I was floored because we really don't know what's going through professional athletes' minds and how, you know, what they're going through off the field or off the court, unless they, you know, talk about it or write a book. But your career got off to an amazing start. You were 47-17 in your first 3 years. You won the Cy in 02. You were 23-5.
Three-time All-Star.
You were going to the playoffs pretty much every year with Oakland. And then you signed that big contract with the Giants. So you go from American League to National League. You sign with the Giants. You didn't really move very far, but you signed a huge deal. Kind of take me back to your thoughts about signing with them, and then what was going through your mind after you signed that big contract?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everything that we do in life goes back to what tools were we given growing up, right? From our parents or, you know, whoever. And, I didn't have a lot of tools to deal with, let's say, you know, the ego kind of taking me out.
Right.
I was kind of raised in an environment learning that, you know, I was special and different than the rest of the kids, which, you know, is great in the moment to hear that as a kid. But I think you grow up and you believe that lie that, like, you know, you don't really have this humility. And I think the humility really allows people to sustain great performance over many, many years. So I didn't have that. early on. So I won the Cy Young and I kind of was believing the hype, you know, that people were loving me. It was all about me. And then, you know, I signed the huge contract 7 years later. I just couldn't handle the attention and the pressure, you know, without kind of blowing out, with my ego kind of blew out, you know.
Did that come from your parents or like high school coaches? Where did it come from? What was the root?
I think it came from the parents. Yeah. I was raised in kind of a different spiritual upbringing, kind of based in Eastern religion, Eastern traditions. And it was all about, you know, I can manifest my reality and create any circumstance I desire, you know, if I have enough self-control and enough willpower. And so that's a great way to see life when things are good. But when things are bad, you end up blaming yourself for everything that's going on and, you know, versus relying on something higher, some higher power, higher strength.
So you were you were just really cocky. You win the Cy Young in your third year in the league. So you just thought you were kind of did you think you were the best pitcher in baseball at one point?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say cocky. I would say it was an underlying feeling of superiority to other people. But if you ever met me at that time,
right.
But I wasn't like
pretty
walking in
feeling.
Disrespecting people. I wasn't disrespecting people. You know what I mean? You would have never known that. It was this very subtle undercurrent that eventually just took me out.
Okay. All right, so then you signed the big deal. What was the contract cakes with the Giants again?
I don't have it in front of me. It was like $127 million,
I think, is what you signed for, right?
$126 million.
Okay, and then you start having bad years. Your first year with the Giants in 2007, you were 11-13. Your ERA was like 4.5. The next year you were 10-17. ERA was over 5. And then I heard you talk about this. You guys go to the World Series in 10 against the Rangers. And Bochy left you off the postseason roster.
Yeah, he did. I mean, rightly so. I mean, I was definitely the fifth best pitcher in that five-man rotation at that time. And so for me, you know, what happened essentially internally, which is great writing a book, because you're like, I could never say this plan. I didn't want to seem vulnerable and weak, but now I'm realizing that, you know, vulnerability is actually strength. My perspective has really changed, but for me, I started to see baseball really as just a vehicle to get me the approval that I needed from other people. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was trying to get it from my dad growing up, and felt like I had to perform and get wins to get his approval and love. And I just kind of transferred that need onto people. So when that contract came in San Francisco, man, I was so desperate for approval and validating that contract that, you know, I just kind of squeezed the life out of my own talent.
Were you enjoying baseball at that time?
No, I was miserable.
You hated it?
Absolutely miserable. Oh, yeah, completely. But, I mean, it didn't matter. I could go buy a Lamborghini, you know, every week. It didn't matter.
You know what I mean? You didn't even enjoy the money. You didn't even enjoy the money.
You can't. No, all I wanted to do was pitch well and be able to compete, but also to add, you know, something to the team, to add, you know, value to my team. And I couldn't do any of that. So Lamborghinis and mansions, none of that crap matters if you're just, you know, you're actually not, the real stuff is not filling you up.
Joined by Barry Zito, Cy Young Award winning pitcher, 2-time World Series champ, has a new memoir called Curveball, which is available wherever books are sold. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Now, just to kind of get into your background, which you alluded to, both of your parents, I guess, were musicians, and your uncle played Bobby Ewing on Dallas, was Patrick Duffy. Correct.
That's right. That was my mother.
Cool.
Yeah, my mother's sister married Patrick. Just a lot of show business really in the background. But my father, yeah, he was a conductor for Nat King Cole, and he met my mother. She was singing for Nat, and definitely a lot of that stuff in the family.
All right, so let's get back to 2010. You go to the World Series. You're left off the roster. You told the interviewer on the MLB Network that Bochy said, "Why don't you just go home, chill out, get ready,
get
mentally ready
right.
for next spring training?" And you said, "No, I want to be there for the world's, you know, for my teammates." But then you started, you actually rooted against the Giants, the team that you were playing for in the World Series.
You know, it's a little more complex than that. But really, you know, I was making $18 million that year, I think, 18 or 19, and a lot more than any guy on the team. And of course, I didn't want to go home. I mean, I wanted to win a World Series my whole life, and I'm not going to go home and watch my team, you know, do that. It was so odd. So, I kind of vouched to, or, you know, vied for a spot to just work out. And if someone gets hurt, you know, insert me in. And, you know, it's not like I was out there, you know, wearing like, you know, Braves and Phillies jerseys under my jersey, but,
right.
You know, I was like, there was a part of me that was like, man, if they lose, then it proves they can't do it without me. And it proves to my ego that I'm still valuable to my team. I mean, I was just in the darkest place of my life, you know, covered in shame, really just reaching for anything to validate, you know, like I said, my ego.
Were you depressed?
Oh, yeah. Depressed, anxious.
Were you taking meds? Were you taking meds for like antidepressant?
No, I was raised, you know, with a family that was adamantly opposed to that kind of stuff. So again, I just, you know, I was doing other stuff, you know, I was smoking a lot of weed. I was like, you know, drinking and doing stuff to just medicate myself. So, you know, it wasn't prescription, but it was, you know, the other kind of stuff.
And, self-medicating. Did you have a wife and kids, I assume, at the time?
No.
You didn't?
I had just started dating the woman I ended up marrying and having kids with now, but we were just in those initial phases of dating. So yeah, I was just a complete wreck. I mean, really, just mentally.
Wow,
Barry, we have a couple of Orioles fans in here. Poor bastards, root for that team. Chris Davis is a guy who is under contract for 3 more years at $17 million. You know, if you could have a conversation with him about, you know, fulfilling expectations, what would that be like? Because you've gone through it, and he's a guy that, you know, is expected to go out and hit 40, 45 home runs. He's not doing it, but he's getting paid a ton of money by the team.
He's probably in the same mental state as you were.
Dude, yeah, man. I mean, I'm very passionate about this kind of thing. I mean, I guess, and mental health, I know, is really showing up lately, and it's important. And you know, for me, man, you know, that 2010 thing, it really just cracked my ego in half. It broke me as a man. And what I realized for the first time and what I was able to admit is I can't do this alone. I need a strength, right? So I've found, you know, in the months following, you know, I found this relationship with God. I found something else to live for besides the approval of the fans, or besides the approval of my teammates. And it allowed me to be liberated, you know, from that cage I was in, you know, so desperate all the time to please everybody in the Bay Area. And eventually it freed me up to, you know, to contribute to a World Series in 2012. And so what I would tell Chris is, man, baseball cannot be your God. And I don't know where he's at spiritually, but, you know, I was worshiping the game of baseball to define me every day. And you know, that is an easy position to get into when you throw all this money and contracts at people.
Well, Barry, I'm just looking at what you made during your career, and I appreciate.
We're jealous.
I was raised in a religious family, and I get all that. But, dude, you made about $150 million. Uh-huh. All right. Tell me some of the good stuff. I know you said you'd buy a Lamborghini in a week, and that didn't make you feel any better. I'm not buying that at all.
How do you enjoy your money now?
Tell me about it, man.
Dude, I used to have 6-7 homes. I used to have, you know, 5 cars. Man, to be honest, I own one home with my family in Nashville, and I drive a used Silverado. And, you know, and we try to put our money to good use and help those around us and donate to causes. And, you know, for me, my life is driven, you know, by a higher power now. So I wait on that to guide me on where to use it and how to steward that money. And, you know, I really am a believer in the idea that I've been blessed to bless others. So, you know, listen, you guys can all relate to this. Anytime you wanted something new, whether it was a, you know, a jet ski, a new video game, I mean, a guitar, whatever, you have a new pair of sneakers, whatever your thing. Dude, they call it the happiness bump. How long did that spike last?
Yeah, right. A couple hours. Yeah.
You know, dude, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But if it makes a significant difference on your life, like you don't own a dishwasher and then you do, okay, that's a different thing. But right. If you're just talking about icing, dude, it doesn't matter. Like the extra 10,000 square feet in the house doesn't matter after, you know, whatever, when it wears off.
How did you deal with, because when you went from Oakland to San Francisco and you're signing this big deal, obviously you got expectations, and then your first few years, you didn't put up the numbers. How did you deal with the fans off the field when you're out in restaurants or out at the mall or, you know, out with your wife or whatever? How did you deal with them? Because they had to be critical.
I mean, I isolated. I was miserable. I mean, I was so defined by my performance that if I would win a game, I would be like out in the coffee shops, 8 a.m., like, hey, anyone want an autograph? Like, I'm right over here, guys. You know, and then if I would lose a game, I would literally hole up in my apartment or in my flat until I had to go to the field. Because I didn't think I was, like, worthy to even walk down the street, and people would be scowling at me. And, you know, at times people were, like, MFing me in the clubs and the bars, like, Zio, get the hell out of here. Like, you know, just a voice from the background kind of yelling at me. I mean,
right.
It was pretty miserable.
Was social media around towards the end of your career?
Towards the end.
Were you into 15. That? Did you get into social media at all?
Someone told me to get on Twitter in January of 2009, and I didn't even know what it was. And I started posting like a couple of these things, and then I hit the comments thing and read it, and I think I like broke down crying literally and just got so angry, and I got off it like a month later.
Good for you.
But you're at Barry Zito Music now.
Barry Zito Music now, if you want to follow him on Twitter.
I got one more question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Again, I was my father's a pastor. I get it. I you know, my mother, very religious. I'm raised in a religious family.
He's not lying, Barry. Yeah. He's a very religious guy.
No. But here's my question. Before he found God, did he find chicks? Were you running around with the chicks?
Of course he did.
Come on.
Did I what?
Were you running around with chicks? Like, was that a way that you medicated yourself?
Womanizing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's all right. In my book, man. I was running around the streets of Hollywood trying to find, you know, the most famous, like, hottest girl to validate my insecurity.
Really?
Did you date
give us
any,
one famous
any
famous
names that we
woman.
Knew?
Britney Spears.
I'm not going to talk about that. It's in the book. But listen, you guys, every one of us can relate. The more, we've all chased hot chicks because we're insecure about ourselves.
Right, right. Of course.
The end.
Pretty much wrapped something up.
Hey, Barry,
right, this book's curveball.
This was awesome, man. Appreciate it. I'm glad you're talking about it. It's awesome.
Thanks for being a good sport, too.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.